Hello and welcome to FX Talk, an eBury podcast all about the foreign exchange market, where we break down some of the main news headlines in financial markets and give our take on what these developments might mean for the world of FX. My name is Matthew Ryan, Head of Market Strategy here at eBury, and I'm joined as always on the podcast by two of my colleagues, our Chief Risk Officer, Enrique Diaz-Alvarez, and Senior Market Analyst, Roman Zuruk. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of FX Talk. It's been an interesting last week or two. The focus this week among market participants has very much been on economic data. We've had a number of data releases, important data releases, out of some of the major economic areas. Out of the US, the latest US inflation report came in hotter than expected. This has caused investors to once again push back their expected timing for US interest rate cuts. And markets now see the Federal Reserve, that is, cutting interest rates at its June meeting. At one stage earlier in the year, the March FOMC meeting was eyed, and indeed was fully priced in for the first cut. This provided a bit of support for the dollar, which remains the best performing major currency so far this year. In the UK, we've had a number of data releases this week. That includes the latest labour report, which, while showing UK earnings growth eased in the 3 months to December, wage pressures remain very high, and the average earnings growth, including bonuses, remains around 6%, 5.8% to be exact. UK inflation data, meanwhile, came in softer than expected, falling to 4% in January. I should say coming at 4% in January, which is the same as in December. Meanwhile, probably the biggest news story came on Thursday, with the latest GDP numbers showing that the UK economy entered into a technical recession in the final quarter of last year. Britain's economy contracted by 0.3% in the final quarter, after a 0.1% contraction in Q3. That was a slightly bigger downturn than expected. Sterling, actually, though, was pretty resilient after the data. We saw a little bit of a mild sell-off in the pound off the back of this recession news, but it was very minimal indeed. And actually, the pound continued to hold around the 125.5 level against the US dollar, and remains near the top of the FX performance tracker for the year. Why did you guys think we saw limited reaction in sterling off the back of this GDP data? And what do you think this sort of data dump out of the UK means for both UK rates and sterling? What do you guys think?
If we include the inflation release, which I still think is the more important data point for the UK, much more than GDP, which is important but lagging, we did have a bit of a downward surprise. But in absolute terms, UK still sports the highest core inflation in the G10, right? We're still talking about 5%, where in most other major economic areas in G10, we're talking about inflation clearly below 4%, if we look at the running average of the last 3 months. So I think that the impact of this GDP number, this data dump, is going to be limited. I still think that the tabletop expectations for the market, i.e. that the Bank of England will keep rates relatively high at these relatively high levels for longer than other G10 banks, is still my based assumption, that the Bank of England would probably be among the G3, Euro, US, UK, probably the last one to actually engage in cuts. And that, I think, is positive for sterling. So I think that the positive behavior that we've seen in sterling, the positive performance we've seen so far this year, is likely to continue.
When it comes to the lack of market reaction, or rather limited moves in reaction to the GDP data, well, first of all, the technical recession was expected, so it was only a bit sharper, but I think that in general, markets were prepared for it. Also, we are talking about a backward-looking data, so this right now the attention should be more on the future, and if we look at the more forward-looking indicators, such as the PMIs, we have seen an uptick there. there. So the downturn is not extended into 2024, and there are some signs that the activity is picking up. Also, if we look at the UK labor market, the easing there that is happening may not be happening at a pace that would be sufficient for the Bank of England to be comfortable with easing monetary policy anytime soon. We have seen that wages remain rather resilient. So against the backdrop of the economic activity increasing somewhat and also the labor market being rather strong still, I think that there is no strong argument in favor of cutting interest rates, and the markets are acknowledging that. When it comes to the expectations to when we can see those cuts, I still think that the UK, as you said, Enrique, will probably be the last among the G3 countries, to start cutting interest rates. And I would bet on June when it comes to the first reduction.
Yes, I think you guys hit the nail on the head there. I think there's probably the two main reasons that you've mentioned there. First of all, the lagged impact or the lagged nature of this data, the GDP data, means actually while the GDP numbers are obviously very important, engaging the health and the state of an economy, the fact that this is data from 6 weeks ago or more means actually investors largely overlook GDP numbers. And when we tend to see very limited reaction in currencies actually off the back of the GDP numbers. The second factor, I would say, as you guys have mentioned again, is I don't think this will have too much of an impact on the Bank of England. As we said, the focus among the MPC remains very much on controlling inflation. That is far more important than supporting near-term growth. And the focus will remain very much on bringing down inflation back towards that 2% target. The upside surprise in wages data this week, I would say, is probably more important for sterling, in fact, than the GDP numbers. And until the MPC sees more evidence of a downtrend, both wages, inflation numbers, particularly in that core index, no UK rate cuts for a little while yet. And I agree with you guys. I think that the June MPC meeting now looks the very earliest for the first cut. And actually, I'm more of the opinion now that we could have to wait a little while longer, probably into the second half of this year, for the first rate reduction from the BOE. Let's move on now to one of the other big pieces of economic news out of the major economies this week, and that is, of course, the latest US inflation numbers. The data came in above economists' expectations. While the headline rate eased to 3.1% in January, this was above the 2.9% that was penciled in, while the core rate of inflation also unexpectedly remained unchanged at 3.9% versus the 3.7% anticipated. Probably of even more concern is the price and momentum, the month-on-month data actually picked up pace, at least in the core index. This rose to 0.4%. And the three-month annualized core rate, which is one of our favoured metrics when we look at US inflation, that actually increased up to 4%, which I think is the highest level since June last year. This very much supports the narrative that Federal Reserve rate cuts are not in the offing anytime soon. At the beginning of the year, markets were fully pricing in the March FOMC meeting for the first rate cut. But since then, we've had some hawkish comments from Federal Reserve members. That includes Chair Jerome Powell, who said that more evidence will be needed on inflation before cuts can take place. And other data aside from the inflation numbers have also come in very strong. The services PMI from ISM now firmly back above 50. The Atlanta Fed's GDP Now estimate showing annualized growth above 3%. While Citigroup's Economic Surprise Index, which shows where data is coming in relative to expectations, is both firmly positive and around its highest level since November. So what are your thoughts, guys, on this, both the inflation data, the general strength in in US activity numbers, and what possible impact this could have on Federal Reserve policy?
I do think that the inflation numbers in particular mark a bit of a turning point. I mean, the story of most of 2023 was downward trend in inflation. And if we look at the last few months, it looks like that trend has stopped and even reversed. Ever since I started looking at markers, I follow the three-month running average of the core CPI as the best indication there is on inflation. And that indicator hit the bottom of early in the fall of 2023. And it spent the last almost 6 months now rebounding and trending up. It's not a massive rebound. It doesn't look like we're going to go back to those 6% levels in core inflation that we saw a year ago. But clearly, we are at or above 4%. The Federal Reserve target is 2%. So an inflationary environment where inflation stabilizes clearly above 4% is completely unacceptable to the Fed. Clearly, I think our view that we will not see a cut in March and even in May is being vindicated. And this may be a bit early, but I'm wondering whether the Federal Reserve can really afford to cut even in June, as markets are pricing in. Again, let's not forget, inflation about 4%, economic growth clearly above any estimate of potential growth, labor market at or beyond full employment, and no indicator of economic weakening anywhere. Frankly, I don't see, you know, 5 to 5.25% rates like we have now in this context seems not at all restrictive policy. So the question we're going to see, the key we're going to see over the next few months is Federal Reserve officials trying to justify whether cuts are warranted with inflation, as I said, clearly above, at or above 4%.
The inflation report was certainly a bucket of cold water on markets' head. And frankly, most of the data coming out of the US right now supports the thesis that rates will have to stay high for a little bit longer. So Enrique's case that he outlined earlier in the year seems to be proving right now more correct. Well, the increase in the three-month annualized core has certainly been ugly with the rates that we are at right now. And those are not the rates that the Federal Reserve would want to see. And yes, the economy remains rather strong. The labor market is tight. So probably they would want to wait a bit longer with cutting rates. So I think March is definitely out of the question. May is probably not off the table entirely, but still perhaps June looks a bit more realistic right now to me. However, at the same time, we also need to consider other data. So if we look at the PCE inflation, and the situation there has been a bit more encouraging. We have also just right now received quite negative retail sales print for the beginning of the year. Industrial production has also not been particularly good. So maybe we start to see some cracks in the economy, but this has only been the very early signs of it. So we'll have to see whether this is indeed the case. But for now, it looks like we'll have to wait just a little bit longer for the Fed to be comfortable in cutting rates, which is obviously a good sign for the US dollar and bad for most other currencies.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think all signs at the moment seem to be pointing to US dollar strength. And it's no surprise really to see the dollar at the top of the FX performance tracker for the year, at least among the major currencies. And there's not very many emerging market currencies as well that perform better than the greenback so far this year. As we're saying, inflation is not coming down anywhere near as quickly as the Fed will have hoped for, and as market has expected. And economic data, not only defying expectations, but I would say defying logic as well. We're seeing no real signs of any slowdown at all. In fact, the data's maybe even slightly stronger as we entered into 2024 than it was at the end of last year, which is a big contrast to what we're seeing pretty much everywhere else, particularly in Europe, where, of course, we see a recession in the UK, stagnation in the Eurozone. I think it's quite remarkable that you know, both economic activity, the labour market in the US are holding up as well as they are. And absolutely, completely rules out a March rate cut. I didn't agree with that even 2 or 3 months ago. Certainly don't see a rate cut in March. Now, I don't think we'll get one in May either. I think we'll need to see far more data between now and then. And I don't think that gives enough time for the Fed to have enough confidence on inflation. And if we continue to see the data surprising to the upside, as it has done in the last few weeks or so, June would very much be in doubt. And we could be waiting maybe even to the second half of this year for the Fed to start lowering rates. We're going to finish now by moving on to our last topic, which surrounds the Japanese economy, because the UK was not the only major economy to enter into a technical recession this week, with the Japanese economy also contracting in the final quarter of last year. The economy shrank by 0.4% on an annualized basis. That was a 0.1% quarter-on-quarter decline. And in the process, losing its spot as the third largest economy in the world, with Germany leapfrogging Japan into third place. This very much compounds the misery for the Japanese yen, which has fallen below the, or I should say above the 150 level against the US dollar so far this week, amid concerns over the state of the economy, and also some comments from Bank of Japan officials, which, while they have suggested that interest rate hikes are coming, they've also stated that this would likely be at a pretty gradual pace. What do you both think of the latest Japanese data, news of a recession, and what impact, if any, do you think this could have on both the Bank of Japan and the Japanese yen?
I mean, I was a little bit surprised about this, the contraction in the Japanese economy. I thought that with this super stimulative policy from the Bank of Japan, if anything, the risk, the data risk was to the upside in GDP. I'm a little stumped, to be honest. I wonder whether Japan is not encountering, like the Eurozone, after many, many years where insufficient demand was the main barrier to growth. Are we moving into a different economic paradigm outside the United States in the major G10 countries where the inability to add supply capacity, the inability or unwillingness to invest, to build, is becoming the main barrier to growth in certain economies? Clearly, demand is there as much as there can be. Employment in Japan, like everywhere, like in the Eurozone, is essentially at or very near full employment. So it's a bit puzzling. In the circumstances 10 or 15 years ago, we would have seen definite growth because demand was there to support the growth. And I wonder if now with the supply side is like I said, is becoming the barrier to growth. The yen continues to be extremely cheap by any measure, but I think that the yen trading going forward is going to depend more on when the Bank of Japan decides to exit the ultra stimulative policies from the pandemic more than the GDP numbers. But nevertheless, I mean, this GDP number is puzzling. I wish I had a better explanation. Hopefully Roman does.
Well, unfortunately, it was very puzzling to me as well. I wouldn't think that the amount of demand in the Japanese economy right now is too significant. And in fact, if we look at the details of this release, the private consumption actually contracted by 0.2%. We've also seen a contraction in business spending. So generally a weakness across the board, but also a quite weak consumption at the end of the year. It generally, all of the releases that come out of the Japan in recent weeks have been quite strange, I would say, because what we have seen recently was also a significant downward surprise in the inflation in Japan's capital. We've also seen some underwhelming data on the wage front. So all of this is boosting the case for Bank of Japan holding off a little bit longer before adjusting policy. And right now, I think the markets have ruled out March or are close to ruling out March as the moment of initiating this tightening cycle in Japan. So perhaps April right now looks a bit more realistic. And I still think that there is a case to be made for tightening monetary policy then. We are still, with regards to Japan, are waiting for the results of wage negotiations. We have seen some headlines, for instance, that auto unions requested record pay increases. And if other companies are also going to push on for wages to be higher, substantially higher, then this could add to the case to normalize monetary policy at some point. But probably this will have to wait a little bit longer. And also, it's an interesting place for the Japanese yen, because with the situation in the US, with a very strong economy, which is calling for keeping rates where they are, and with the data which is putting in doubt monetary policy normalization in Japan right now, this is probably a worst place to be for the Japanese yen. And we are indeed near its lowest levels. It continues to be an underperformer in the G10, and it continues to sell off against all of its peers. So unless something happens in the data, unless we see convincing evidence that supports the tightening in monetary policy, unless we see this Shunto negotiations suggesting that there is a pressure for wages to be stronger, unless we see that, the Japanese yen will probably continue to struggle, particularly if we see the U.S. economy performing as well as it is right now, and markets correcting upwards their expectations of rates in the U.S. So a problematic place for a Japanese yen.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think this is a bit of a concern, actually, for the yen, because this was a big downside surprise, particularly given that, let's not forget, rates in Japan have not been increased in this inflationary period. They're the only major central bank not to raise interest rates, and yet the economy still entered into a technical recession. I do wonder what kind of impact the aging population has had on growth and activity in Japan. But with life expectancy in Japan is one of the highest in the world. It means that the labor force as a percentage of the population is shrinking, and output potentially lower as a result of that. As far as the Bank of Japan is concerned, I still think focus will be on the latest wage numbers and its impact on inflation. I still say that the April meeting looks likely for the first hike. But the problem for the yen, I would say, is not necessarily when the Bank of Japan will start raising rates, but at what pace. And communications from BOJ members have suggested that there's probably going to be a pretty gradual one. And that being the case, not particularly good news for the yen. And I think our very bullish view on the yen that we've had for a little while, we may have to moderate that slightly should Bank of Japan officials continue to stress that these rate hikes will take place at a pretty slow pace during the rest of the year. And that's it from us. If you're keen to hear more about our thoughts on the FX market, visit eBreed's website or follow us on social media. And don't forget to rate and review the podcast on your favorite podcast app. And let us know if there are any topics you'd like to hear more on during upcoming episodes. Keep an eye out for our next episode in a fortnight's time. Thank you all very much for listening.